It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today, we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including 2 deny allegations of shoddy Foothills golf course work, Phoenix OKs restrictions on data centers, Mountain Point grad is a Fulbright scholar, Ahwatukee salon owners turn passion into luck, new general business license to help city support local businesses, and Tempe restaurant owner finds community support after burglary. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. 2 deny allegations of shoddy Foothills golf course work by Paul Mariniak. The 2 companies being sued by the owner of the Foothills golf course have denied allegations of shoddy repairs that left the site unplayable or open at a discounted price. AZ Management and Investments, AZMI, a subsidiary of owner, California-based Anabi Properties, sued global golf course developer and management firm Troon Golf and a subsidiary, Casa Verde Golf and Landscaping, LLC, in Maricopa County Superior Court 2 months ago. The suit alleges numerous deficiencies in the repairs Casa Verde undertook last year, stating the work was so poor that it generated an immediate avalanche of poor reviews on golf social media sites that caused Foothills to lose business. AZMI also alleged that it had to close the course several times early this year for emergency repairs and that it reopened at drastically reduced rates because playing conditions were so poor. Both Troon and Casa Verde denied the allegations in responses filed 2 weeks ago and asked Judge Timothy Ryan to dismiss the suit and order AZMI to pay their attorney's fees. No hearing has yet been set in the case. AZMI contracted with Troon to operate Foothills as a first-class facility. The suit said Casa Verde, in which Troon is the principal owner, was hired to upgrade the course extensively in the summer of 2024. But even though the clubhouse has been renovated with a new lounge called The Bunker, an upgraded restaurant, and expanded pro shop, AZMI said work was so bad that the entire course needs to be redone. AZMI accuses Casa Verde Golf of being responsible for destroyed greens, but also improper irrigation work during what was supposed to be an overhaul of the course, and says Troon was not properly supervising the landscape company as its contract required. Casa Verde and Troon refused AZMI's demand that they pay the cost to redo the golf course, even though defendants' own personnel have told AZMI that the golf course needs to be redone because the greens will not come back on their own. If AZMI does not redo the golf course, then it will suffer the same economic damage it has suffered to date given the condition of the golf course and the negative reviews it will continue to receive, the suit states. It says 7 holes sustained irrigation blowouts, and that while AZMI was not expecting to do any overseeding as a result of the greens project, it had to overseed on 11 different days between September 30th and January 29th. The suit also quotes from a report prepared by Brian Whitlock of the U.S. Golf Association, who was called in by AZMI to investigate the course. The putting greens were renovated in the summer of 2024 and have not performed to expectations, Whitlock wrote, adding, it is evident that the renovation was not completed in alignment with goals and objectives outlined by the contractor. As a result, the soil physical properties are inconsistent across greens and within each green, it continued. Even with potable water, the inconsistencies in each green create very challenging conditions in which to create consistent soil moisture across the greens. Unfortunately, the greens are not set up for long-term success. For the most part, Troon denies the allegations, though on others it states it lacks sufficient knowledge or information to form a belief about the truth of the allegations. Both Troon and Casa Verde also accuse AZMI of violating court rules by disclosing confidential aspects of settlement communications related to efforts to resolve the dispute over the repairs. Casa Verde also denies a number of the allegations, while on others it adds it is without sufficient information to form a belief as to the truth of the remaining allegations. On many of AZMI's assertions, it states, defendant Casa Verde denies the allegations that Casa Verde's work was improper or caused damage to the golf course. Casa Verde also disputes assertions by AZMI that it failed to remove the top 4 inches of sand on every green and replace it with a new mix. Some greens seem to have around 1 inch removed, AZMI's suit alleges. Some greens may have had 2 inches removed. Still others seem to have had nothing removed. Casa Verde describes those allegations as speculative, vague, and not based on any objective measurement or verifiable data. The company also dismisses the Whitlock report, stating it reserves the right to challenge the admissibility, reliability, and conclusions of any such report. In response to AZMI's assertion that Casa Verde used only half of the estimated 1,900 tons of new sand the course redo would have required, the defendant called that allegation speculative, unsupported by admissible evidence, and premature. Stating that AZMI fails to state claims upon which relief can be granted, Casa Verde also declares, plaintiff's injuries and damages, if any, were solely caused and or contributed to by plaintiff's own negligence and inattention, or plaintiffs assume the risk thereof, or were occasioned by the conduct of others for whom defendant Casa Verde is not responsible. Moreover, it says, if it is found to be negligent by a judge or jury, the damages recoverable from defendant Casa Verde are limited to the percentage of casual fault attributable to the business. Casa Verde also disputes AZMI's claims that it lost business because of poor online reviews, stating, any alleged harm to plaintiff's business is speculative and constitutes a legal conclusion to which no response is required. To the extent a response is required, defendant Casa Verde denies the allegations. That was two deny allegations of shoddy Foothills golf course work. Our next article, Phoenix OKs Restrictions on Data Centers, also by Paul Mariniak. Phoenix City Council last week unanimously added for the first time zoning and design regulations for data centers, acknowledging firefighters' concerns about their dangers and numerous residents' concerns about their adverse impact on neighborhoods. The city's controls on one of the fastest segments of industrial development in the valley were hailed by Mayor Kate Gallego, other council members, and city planning staff. They noted how the emergence of artificial intelligence has sparked the development of increasingly large data centers that consume massive amounts of land, water, and electricity, but produce relatively few jobs compared to other types of industrial uses. These impacts are significant and include the stability of the electrical grid and the significant demand data centers have for electrical power, fire safety, even the size and complexity of these facilities, said Planning and Development Director Josh Bednarik. He cited challenges with fire resource capacity in some parts of the city and the potential for hazardous materials on site, utilization of on-site power from diesel to nuclear, along with battery storage, the water demand that could be needed at the providers to supply electricity to power dry cooling systems. He noted, large data centers consume between 100,000 and 1 million gallons of water a day, or the equivalent of 8,000 homes' use in a year. Their size costs land that could be used for services such as healthcare and access to healthy food and generate noise pollution from the servers, cooling systems, and generators, he added. Many of the health and safety impacts are driven by a dramatic change in the intensity of data centers in the last 15 years, Bednarik said. An example, Bednarik compared a data center build in 2010 that used only 6.9 acres to one built in 2023 on 40th Street near the Red Mountain Loop 202 freeway that consumed 80 acres and was so large it needed its own electrical substation. This is a clear contrast with the traditional office use and requires a different level of development review to protect public health and safety, Bednarik said. This lack of any sort of policy or regulatory framework, coupled with a tremendous demand for electricity from the data center industry, highlights the urgency needed for a framework to be in place. The City Planning Commission unanimously recommended approval of the new regulations with a couple modifications. 4 of the city's 15 village planning committees recommended council reject the controls, including the Ahwatukee Foothills VPC, while 3 others, including the Desert View VPC, recommended approval with some modifications or additions. In light of the recommendations made by the Planning Commission and some VPCs, staff changed 2 requirements. Instead of a letter from local electrical utilities that they will service the data center for at least 2 years, a developer must now have an agreement stating sufficient capacity exists on the power grid to meet the center's energy demand. The other change removed a requirement that construction of a data center align with the city's green construction code. During lengthy public comment on the controls, numerous speakers condemned data centers' impact on neighborhoods, availability of land for affordable housing, and potential health and safety hazards. Those hazards were underscored by 3 firefighters who gave impassioned speeches on behalf of the new controls on data centers' design and growth. Speaking on behalf of the International Association of Firefighters, Chris Green said that without the controls on where data centers can be built and how they should be designed, they can go just anywhere they want to go. These are not just large, cumbersome labyrinth boxes, he said. They can be the size of neighborhoods. The power demand on these things is severe. The water demand on these things is severe. For the fire response and emergency responders that come to these facilities, what they're going to find is a maze. Green said, first responders' access to the centers in an emergency often is hindered by data-related security systems in the facilities. And he said, the chemicals that will burn off in fire in data center are absolutely severe, some of the worst you'll ever see. Fire departments across the country are really ill-prepared to deal with these facilities, Green said. Green said the centers usually house lithium-ion batteries, and when those things have problems, those fires are extremely difficult to suppress. Moreover, he said it is difficult to shut down power to a data center in the event of a fire, even though that often it's necessary to protect firefighters and increase their ability to eradicate a blaze. When a fire gets outside of the box of a data center, you've got real problems with the kind of chemicals or dioxins that will pour on the community around you, he said, calling the new regulations your opportunity to get up some guardrails on where these boxes go. Green also warned that in other parts of the country, data center developers are considering the addition of small nuclear reactors on site because electric utilities can't meet their demand. Chris Murphy recalled how, as a young firefighter, he was dispatched with his company to fight a blaze at a relatively smaller data center. It was full of smoke, pitch black, and the sprinklers inside were going off, Murphy recalled, noting the unfamiliar layout, miles of cables and rows of equipment, as well as toxic smoke from the uncontrolled fire were extremely, extremely challenging, and it was deemed a hazardous materials call, which we were all exposed to. Another city firefighter, Captain Michael Duffy, representing Local 493 of United Phoenix Firefighters, said some of the chemicals emitted by data center fires are things that you just can't wash off with a shower. They're in the dirt, he said. They stay there. These facilities have already hurt firefighters in the city of Peoria. He also pleaded for approval of the regulations, noting it was important to regulate where data centers can be built. When you think about where these go, understand that with the smoke being the hot zone, anything downwind of this thing, when it's on the fire, those people are being exposed along with your firefighters, Duffy said. Besides the dangers posed by data centers, other speakers addressed their impact on neighborhoods. Ginger Sykes Torres, vice president of Local First Arizona, the largest business coalition in the United States, said the newly adopted regulations will enable the city to make informed decisions that affect the health and safety of our communities, creating a pathway for thoughtful and sustainable growth and development. We are facing an affordability crisis, and we're in a perfect storm of national and local issues impacting our state's resiliency, Sykes-Torres said. Federal incentives for clean energy are being eliminated in Washington, while electricity demand in Arizona is surging and power companies are struggling to keep up. Data centers use a jaw-dropping amount of energy, which is expected to grow. That was Phoenix OK's restrictions on data centers. You are listening to the East Valley News on SunSounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then, click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Mountain Point grad is a Fulbright scholar, by AFN News staff. A member of Mountain Point High School's class of 2021 has earned a Fulbright scholarship to study in Italy this fall. Ella Weir, who graduated this year from Michigan State University's Lyman Briggs College with a bachelor's degree in astrophysics, will be undertaking a research project in Italy titled Probing Globular Clusters for the Existence of Intermediate Mass Black Hole. Her mother, Amy Carter, said the Ahwatukee native flourished academically despite the disruptions of the COVID pandemic. Ella and many of her peers have had successful academic careers post-COVID, and it reflects well on our local school system and community, Carter said. As a Michigan State freshman, Ella in 2022 won a Gold Award, the highest given to a Girl Scout, for a research project she conducted on dying saguaros. I wanted to learn more about why saguaros fall over, especially in urban areas where there are more fallen than usual, Ella said after winning the award. It was important to me because everyone in Arizona has a connection to these iconic plants. To complete her mission of raising awareness and educating the public, Ella created a brochure on saguaro health and the factors, like climate change, that are affecting their lifespans in urban areas. An additional element to Ella's project was her website, SaveOurSaguarosAZ.com, where she shared images of fallen and healthy saguaros in the valley and the multiple factors that contribute to their health. In addition to the educational material, Ella also created a project on iNaturalist, a social network dedicated to mapping and sharing observations of biodiversity across the globe. My project on iNaturalist allowed users to log saguaros that they see in their community, creating a count of the population, which scientists can use to measure saguaro health, said Ella. Her work as an upperclassman at Michigan State took her to less earthly pursuits as she focused on researching black holes, a region in space where gravity is so intense that nothing, not even light, can escape. It's formed when massive stars collapse at the end of their life cycle. The Fulbright program is the U.S. government's flagship international educational exchange program, which is sending Ella and 19 other Michigan State scholars and students to 17 different countries this fall to continue their research in various fields. MSU's Fulbright scholars and students embody the university's mission to address the world's most pressing challenges and advance the greater good, locally and globally, said MSU Interim Provost Thomas Jites-Coe. Adding, they are embarking on transformative international exchanges that will help advance MSU's global commitments and connections. The Fulbright program was established over 75 years ago and has celebrated more than 400,000 participants since its inception. Each year, the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs announces the top producing institutions for the Fulbright program. That was Mountain Point grad as a Fulbright scholar. Our next article, Ahwatukee salon owners turn passion into luck. Also by AFN News staff. The trio of partners who own Alas Salon in Ahwatukee turned their passion into a lucky charm recently, winning the $10,000 grand prize in a product promotion contest. Owners Andrew Acker, Lynette Alm, and Shauna Simoncini, who used their initials to name the salon at 3936 East Chandler Boulevard, won the Stylist Sweepstakes that From Easy ran for its Morphosis hair treatment product line. Alas uses the Cells hair color and treatment products by From Easy, an Italian hair care and color company founded in 1945 in Milan by Roberto Francina. Initially, From Easy sold hair products to barbershops, but later transitioned into manufacturing and developing its own line of brands, building a global recognition for its professional hair color and styling products and its support for stylists who use them. The sweepstakes actually was a kind of raffle, with each proof of purchase for a Morphosis product sold counting as an individual entry. Formisi's director of marketing flew into Phoenix from Philadelphia on June 30th to personally hand the $10,000 check to the trio. They're already thinking of using their windfall to attend Formisi's annual International Congress Hair Show, a rotating gathering of hair professionals that will be held this year in Madrid, Spain. We are seriously contemplating using our winnings for continuing our education by attending the show, said Alm. It would be a trip of a lifetime. The three stylists were already friends and colleagues when they opened Alas on July 19th of 2022. Acker, a Valley native, trained and certified in Formisi hair color, describes himself on the salon's website as curious about everything new from techniques and products to today's trends and fashionable colors. He and his partners share that curiosity, which likely helped contribute to their sweepstakes win. We are continually learning and growing, which is necessary in this ever-evolving industry, Alm said. We also love testing new products, wanting nothing but the best for our clients. Alm, a Chicago native with 35 years in the hairstyling industry, moved to the Valley 7 years ago. She describes herself as a corrective color specialist and a master razor cutter, and also was a From Easy color teacher who taught Simoncini. The two women also had their hearts set on hairstyling since they were kids. I knew when I was a small child and started cutting my own bangs that I wanted to be a hairstylist, Alm said. Ditto for Simoncini, who earned a business degree at Arizona State University but knew where she put it to use. Since age 3, she's wanted to be a stylist and salon owner. She also trained at the Paul Mitchell School of Phoenix under Alm's tutelage. The three partners chose Ahwatukee for their joint venture because most of their clientele already lived in the community. We were fortunate to find a 3-man studio right here in Ahwatukee, said Alm. We are in a small space, but the room has this amazing, fun, relaxed, and caring energy. The three of us love to collaborate during consultations with clients and constantly give our opinions to each other as well. Alm said salon life in Phoenix differs from Chicago in that the Windy City is a bit more fast-paced. But at this point in my career, I prefer a more relaxed environment, she said, adding that hair color appointments also change significantly with the season in Chicago. I still recommend subtle changes in hair color with the season here in Phoenix. Must be the Midwesterner in me. The three partners also have developed a loyal clientele, Alm said, noting, Alas has been voted the top salon in the Ahwatukee Foothills News Best of Ahwatukee poll the last 3 years in a row. That loyalty, she said, has been earned. We want clients to look and feel their best, all while having a good time while they're with us. We are honored and truly blessed to have amazing clients. That was Ahwatukee Salon Owners Turn Passion into Luck. Next up from the Tempe Newsroom, new general business license to help city support local businesses. Increased communication and services for the local business community are coming soon thanks to a new general business license passed by the City Council on July 1st. The license will provide a single point of intake for information and establish a more complete database to better serve businesses, bridging a current information gap. An estimated 30,000 Tempe businesses are not in the city's database. Soon, the city will be able to gather and track crucial demographics, including information on minority and disadvantaged business ownership, which is currently unavailable. This new database will be used to encourage engagement in decision-making, provide information about events and opportunities, and reach businesses in the event of emergencies. businesses can opt out of publicly sharing their information in the database. The license also opens the door for Tempe's economic development team to share resources such as grants, training opportunities, technical support, workforce development, and more directly with the community. Businesses with a permanent location in Tempe, including those not required to obtain a transaction privilege tax or TPT license, such as professional services and contractors with job sites in Tempe, will be required to obtain a business license. The new license will go into effect on August 1st, though the fee will not be required until January 1st of 2026, with first renewal on January 1st of 2027. As a special introductory incentive, businesses that register before January 1st, 2026 won't have to pay any fees until January 1st of 2027. The fee for the license is $25 annually, with revenue going to cover administrative costs and program to support businesses. This aligns with fees charged by other cities in the region. And finally, from ABC 15. Tempe restaurant owner finds community support after burglary, by Jordan Bonke. A Tempe restaurant owner is feeling the generosity of his community after a recent burglary at his burger restaurant. Yanni Lanau came to work with a bad taste in his mouth when he saw the mess a burglar left behind at his burger spot near Southern Avenue and McClintock Drive. The bottom window was broken, Lanau said. Around midnight on July 7th, the burglar appears to have used a rock to shatter a window, then made a lot of noise while stealing the cash register before darting off with hundreds of dollars in cash. For the owner of Johnny's Burgers in Tempe, there was a brief thought after the burglary to throw in the towel on running a restaurant he's had for the past decade. "Many times I have thought that," Lanau said with a laugh. He says that because, while this was a bad start to a typically slow summer season for him, he's been through much worse. This isn't the first setback for Lanau. He shared a video showing the first time he laid eyes on his restaurant after a fire destroyed it just 2 days after Christmas in 2023. He says an electrical fire caused him to close down for a year and 2 months. But while he was recovering from the fire, loyal customers would physically come by and ask, not if, but when he would reopen. "We felt like this is not just for us, it's for the community," Lanau said. When the community saw the burglary, Lanau said his post went viral, which led to a bump in business. He says one person even called, saying they wanted to give him the $250 stolen from the cash register. He turned down the money, but accepted that the generosity of the community he lives in is worth all the hard work. "It's emotional to know people care. They care for each other, and they try to help in any way," Lanau said. That was Tempe restaurant owner finds community support after burglary. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.